You're listening to The Stack, first broadcast on the 25th of January 2014 on Monocle 24. A look at the kaleidoscopic Kiwi print range with our editor-in-chief, and a fresh look at men's fashion coverage from London to Tokyo. Nimble, pocket-sized or full spread, The Stack has just landed on your doormat. Coming up today, a brash Japanese title that is balancing fashion and mainstream entertainment, and a look at some other fashion titles that make the cut when it comes to reporting. That and more news on the Antipodean print scene. Last week we went to Swiss-inspired print retail space Motto in Melbourne. This week we'll be going to Auckland, where man about town Tyler Brulé has been doing some pretty serious shelf perusal. All that and plenty more besides on this 74th edition of The Stack, here on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to Studio One here at Midori House in London for this edition of The Stack with me, Tom Edwards. We'll be talking men's fashion titles with Charlie Porter a little later. But up first on the programme, we're going to be going to Auckland to hear what Tyler Brulé has been up to. You're listening to The Stack on Monocle 24. Now, as part of our new format, we'll be staying in touch with the spiritual leader of the programme. That would be, of course, our editor-in-chief, Tyler Brulé. This week, he's on a round-the-world tour. We're catching up with him midway between his first stop in Houston and his next stop in Tokyo. No, not Honolulu, but Auckland. And he joins us on the line now from the lovely neighbourhood of Ponsonby. Tyler, welcome to the... Well, you're welcome to your own programme. Good to have you with us. Tell us about your tour. Why did we kick off in Houston?
Well, good morning and kia ora first, Tom. We kicked off in Houston for a couple of reasons. First, Texas is a very big place, and we've never done a Monocle event there before. And we have something of a growing subscriber base in Dallas, in Austin, and Houston as well. And we just thought Houston made the most sense. Most further south of all of those points, so we thought the weather would be favorable. But we were also invited by some very nice people in Houston to use a very, very nice institution. That would be the Manil Collection. So we went out to meet our readers and some other very nice Houstonians.
Wonderful stuff. Well, it sounds like everyone had a fine old time. I wonder, that's the sort of the scene at the Manil Connection. What about the scene on US newsstands while you were there, Tyler? What did you make of the of the competition and of how it's all presented?
Well, there's actually some rather sad news, Tom. One of the most respected, in fact, many would regard it was the last independent newsstand in all of Houston. Now, we're talking about a very large city here, and a city which is booming, one which, of course, is incredibly multicultural, home to many multinational headquarters, of course, given the petrol industry. And yet, the last international newsstand was not able to make a go of it, and they've ended up shuttering. So, you know, this leaves, of course, big players like Barnes & Noble, which do have an international selection available, that sort of part of it. But a lot of people are just saying, you know, we need to do something about this because, you have an international city, but there's nowhere for people to buy, you know, not just magazines, you know, maybe in Spanish, and I'm not talking about titles from south of the border, but, you know, magazines that are coming in from Spain or elsewhere in Latin America or magazines in German, but also no Russian titles for oil dealers, et cetera. So there was some sort of long faces, I would say, Tom.
Absolutely. Now, Tyler, we mentioned you're in New Zealand, of course. You could have made your Pacific sort of stop off in Honolulu. Perhaps we mentioned Hawaii, but you're in Auckland instead. Tell us why that was your selection this time around.
Well, a couple of reasons. I mean, the principal reason, I'm down here recruiting, Tom. I don't think anyone in the office knows this, but there could be, you know, a new honcho. I wouldn't say head honcho, but some type of honcho might be gracing our floors soon. We'll have to see. But we've been down here very quietly. I'm traveling with our publisher, so we've been meeting some candidates around the world. That was the main reason. But also looking at the newsstand as well. And you know, New Zealand is an absolutely fascinating market. Not unlike their rather larger neighbor, of course, around the corner, that being Australia. This is a part of the world where people absolutely love magazines. The Kiwis are some of the biggest consumers of magazines in the world. And you have a very healthy, handsome-looking newsstand here.
Well, I was going to ask you about that because it's known as the land of the long white cloud, of course. Is there plenty of color on newsstand?
There is a lot of color on newsstand. There's a lot of color down here in general. This is a long weekend. Certainly on this this part of the North Island, bank holiday just for Auckland on Monday. And so absolutely sparkling, fantastic summer weather that they're having down here. So it gives, you know, a particular sort of lift to the newsstand. There was a big M&A deal down here, well, not so recently now, but Bauer, of course, a very big publisher, you know, one of the biggest publishers in Europe, of course, a big player in the United Kingdom as well. They took over all of Australian Consolidated Press, and that is, of course, you know, in Australia and in this market. So, you know, they've been shaking things up a bit. I mentioned the magazine Home, which is, you know, a very, very good-looking magazine, you know, and a lot of very good independent publishing as well, and one really, really outstanding newsstand here, which is called Magnation. Of course, it has roots in Australia, but also over here, and it's, you know, it's just the type of newsstand that we'd all like to have around the corner from us.
Absolutely. Always good to hear about people doing well wherever they happen to be. Tyler, that's great to hear from you in Auckland. Just tell us, where are you headed next?
Tokyo awaits, and I'm sure there'll be a few treats that I can hopefully bring back to the studio next Saturday, Tom.
Good stuff. Well, we'll look forward to seeing you back here at Midori House when you return. That's our editor-in-chief, Tyler Roulet, on the road from Auckland. You're listening to The Stack. Stay tuned. Up next, we'll be delving into the stack of my guests. Stay tuned. So you're with The Stack, live from Midori House with me, Tom Edwards. Now, as the men's fashion weeks around the world draw to a close, what better guest could we possibly have to welcome to the studio than the fashion critic Charlie Porter, previously at Fantastic Man, The Guardian. Charlie now writes for the Financial Times, also a bit of a DJ, and prolifically posts on charlieporter.net. He's laughing, I don't know why, but we'll establish that in a moment. Charlie, welcome back to The Stack.
Hi.
Why is that risible? Are you a risible DJ?
Yeah, I'm terrible. I'm the worst. And actually, my friends are trying to make me just play with records. And CDs are really easy because you can just press start and it starts. When you start playing a record from the beginning, it goes blub, 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 like that. And so, yeah, I'm terrible. And I hate mixing as well. Because I like the end of records. So I grew up listening to the whole song. So
maybe I've slightly misrepresented.
Yeah, basically, perhaps. I'm just a very bad record player person sometimes.
Less catchy, but I think it's equally descriptive. Let's talk a little bit about the fashion weeks then. It is this kind of incredible circus. How did it treat you, the few weeks? It's quite a sort of crazy time.
Yeah, we do the men's shows from the very beginning of January till, yeah, we finished on Sunday night in Paris. It's very intense. My work there is very, it's different from other people's because I'm very much there as a critic. I'm not there in any sort of like magazine or kind of business sense. It's actually really interesting because I just go to the shows, then go back to wherever I'm staying, write, go to bed, go to the shows. But then also there's this whole other world. That's why it's interesting to come talk about magazines today, but there's this whole other world of people who are there to get business for their magazines who are quite often at shows they hate and like are not able to say it. You know, it's interesting that the kind of fashion magazine industry does keep afloat because of the fashion industry wanting it to exist, like for them to then get the gene pool of stylists and hair and makeup people or whatever. So it's quite a symbiotic relationship, this weird kind of 20th century world of the catwalk and this weird 20th century world of magazines. You know, it's an interesting kind of bubble.
Well, I wanted to ask you a bit more about that symbiosis as you describe it, because it must be strange when you've got your sort of critical hat on that you can take a critical approach and actually assess things on their merits as you perceive them. Yeah. Do you think there's a lack of that then because of those other complexities that happen in certainly in the magazine world? There are all these other commercial considerations.
Yeah.
Is there a deficiency then of criticism when it actually comes to what you're seeing on the
It depends on what you're looking for. I mean, like, I used to work on GQ and I work with Dylan, and he's very upfront about the way he works and he works with advertisers, and I think people think there's a kind of murky world of fashion, like this secret world of things that are unsaid, but it's actually the ones that do it best. They're very direct about it, and they're very clear that they're a friend of the industry, I think is the kind of correct word for it. I think there are some people who say they're critics but aren't being truthful. I don't know. Like, I'm really lucky with the FT because I have no job there. My work for them is done now for 6 months. I literally just go and be a critic, so I don't really feel like I'm having to represent or do any sort of kind of like, you know, FaceTime in that way. I'm there literally just to do a job for them, and luckily they want actual criticism. And also it's super interesting as well. I find the business side really fascinating, and so, which is kind of fits with the FT as well. So it's it's not just the clothes, it's why that brand is designing them at that time, it's whether they'll sell, it's whether the cat has a relationship to what we're actually going to store, and you know, and also the optimism around a brand as well. There's so many other things than just those trousers are nice, you know. It's a
complex thing. Well, we'll talk a bit more obviously about the magazines, maybe about some of those other commercial considerations as well, but I just wondered in terms of the last few weeks and what you've actually seen in terms of the fashions briefly, do you think that, you know, are people daring enough, being bold enough? Are collections maybe still a little too commercial? What's your take this year?
The interesting thing on menswear is that so you have to separate fashion from luxury. Quite often we see luxury shows on fashion shows. What the luxury industry is doing at the moment is doing anything they can to dress men, but not in a suit and tie, because men either aren't wearing suit and tie because they feel like they can't represent that as an image on the catwalk because of a financial crisis or whatever. But then also the reality of a lot of men who earn a lot of money don't ever wear a suit and tie. So quite often it's how can they do smart without doing that. So it's interesting that you can actually really divine a kind of way that men are going in the lifestyles. It was an interesting season. I thought it was quite cautious in some ways. I was expecting there to be a lot more fur. I really don't like fur, so I've got myself really ready for there being more fur, but I felt like there was a lot of double-faced cashmere and vicuna.
What's not to like?
Exactly, yeah. But it did get to a point by about middle of Paris where the number of times I've written raglan sleeve, double-faced cashmere coat, and you can't really say it any other way, so it's a bit, the novelty wears off after a while.
These are the challenges you face. Let's talk a bit about that. those commercial considerations that you alluded to then. What about sort of where, you know, advertising, particularly with regards to magazines and fashion industry, you're talking about that symbiotic relationship and advertising. Is that problematic in your mind? Or do you think that it is actually quite an easy relationship? It's pretty functional and everyone knows the ins and outs and it all works fairly well together.
It's different in different cases. You can't, because different houses are different and also different magazines are different. I mean, last time I was here, it must have been October because I bought the September issue of Vogue in, and we only talked about the adverts. Like I was reading the magazine through adverts, and I find some adverts really interesting. I don't think it necessarily makes for good magazines. I think what also advertising has done is it's really set magazines in a certain template, because they have to have front section, they have to have front of book for single page ads, and then, you know, there's the well because there's no ads in that section. And I think magazines can get a bit stuck in that format. I think that's sometimes quite a problem. And also then articles are written because they're front of book, so you don't really feel like they've got that much density to them. But one of the magazines I bought is Adbusters, which is the super radical magazine from, I can't remember where it's from, but it's super radical and it has no advertising, and it's kind of such a tonic to see a magazine which is just, they do what the hell they want and be super political and not have any sort of front book, back of book. It just is what it is. And the cover is a Mickey take of the Economist Big Idea cover, and it's called The Big Ideas of 2047, and it's basically just about, they saying the world's going to end or whatever. It's super, super, super depressing. But it's interesting that I think our idea of magazines is very set now in this quite formal world where they can't take risks or they can't do anything different because they have to be pleasing the advertisers and also kind of front of book, back of book.
Great stuff. Well, we're going to talk about that that title in particular and all the others that you have in your stack with Charlie Porter when we continue with our programme right after this.
The February issue of Monocle will help you plot your global progress in 2014. Turn the pages to find the villages, cities and nations you need to visit for inspiration, work and play. Whether you're looking for a new HQ, want to get that movie made, or perhaps are a spy, we'll tell you how to plan your itinerary.
Where do you go it alone? The forest in Oregon. What is the best place to set up a design shop? That'll be Taiping Shang in Hong Kong. And a furniture studio? Danziger Strasse in Berlin. In the design section, we've crossed the globe to discover the places we'll have designs on in 2014.
In the edit section, we charter a new course for 2014 from behind the kitchen counters of Flanders, Belgium's up-and-coming culinary destination. We interview the rising chefs and food growers that are changing the region's image and putting it on the gastronomic map. We also take a sip of Georgian wine and Mexican coffee, some of the indispensable products in Monocle's pantry for this year.
The February issue of Monocle is on newsstands now, or get yourself a subscription. Visit monocle.com to find out how.
So I am still here with Charlie Porter on this week's edition of The Stack. Charlie, we sort of eased almost into our stack of mags before. We were talking about, what was your sort of overriding, impressed, pleased with that? Was it slightly kind of satirical?
I adore cover? It. It's absolutely, I was in Magma before I came up, and all those magazines where I know exactly what they're going to be. And then there's this one sat there where you've got no idea what it's going to be. And I want that relationship with a magazine. I don't want to be given what I know I'm going to get.
Adbusters, which is the one we're talking about, does obviously a good job at doing that. As you sort of look around your newsstand, looking at so many titles in it within these kind of areas, are there enough surprises like that then, do you think, generally speaking? Are you surprised that often when you're browsing?
No, but then also I'm 40, so like I've been reading magazines a long time. But the thing is, I think also like I know how to read magazines in a particular way. You know, so if I was younger, maybe there would be. I don't know. I mean, it's I certainly don't want to damn what people do, but I do feel obviously that we're still in the kind of the post Fantastic Man and post Butt era where everyone's trying to look like Fantastic Man but without the humour. Yeah, I'm not really surprised that often. No, I'd like to be more. But yeah,
maybe that's a good thing. Maybe people know what people like, and they deliver exactly that. So that's Adbus, obviously quite a particular take, as you say, kind of ad free. Yeah. What about when you look around the world though? Because presumably, maybe there's not surprises, but there's different attitudes, different aspects that can be highlighted depending on where you go. Are there particular sort of parts of the world where you like to head for various moments of enlightenment?
I mean, I've got two Japanese magazines here, well, two issues of Men's Nonno, and I actually thought it was called Men's Nonno, and I'm actually upset that I realise it's Nonno. But it's really interesting that the shows, the kind of markets and the importance of markets, and it's really weird, like the British take up a huge area of the kind of front row and the whatever, and we'll sit there like no one moving, and we're always there the same year when you're out. But you're really aware that other markets are becoming much more important, and actually really we should give some of our seats over because they sell a lot more clothes in those countries. But I think there's a big boom in Japan and China in men's titles, and there seems to be a real desire for men to read about fashion there in a way that feels different from here. I think that our men's titles are very, again, they're set, you know what they are. And I think they're all quite aware of the fact that they probably haven't got that long to exist, but they don't see growth. When the figures come out, men's market's always the one that's kind of shrinking, whereas it actually seems that in Japan and China, it's actually a growth area.
Let's delve into Men's Nonno then, because there's several things about this that I'm intrigued by. First of all, just in terms of, how the magazine looks, is it sort of willfully setting itself apart, do you think? I mean, I know there's some other inserts, which I also... Yeah. I think, you also have to open these. Okay. I want you to open these inserts live. Yeah, let's delve in. What have we got here?
Okay, so this is a present in the January issue, and it's like a blue plastic...
It might be in some kind of exceptionally large envelope.
Yeah, it's kind of got a logo on it that's a bit like Fred Perry, but isn't Fred Perry.
Yeah.
And it's a cardboard...
This is quite good, see?
Box.
This is it. Perfect fiddly. Sound effects for this one. I should have got you some kind of envelope opener. There we go.
And it smells really plastic. And it is a...
So what is that exactly?
Plastic
thing?
It's a kind of... I think it's iPad holder.
Oh.
So they like giving quite bland gifts.
I don't know. Would that be enough on its own to get you to the newsstand?
No.
Possibly not.
No, I think Men's Nonno for a different reason. I think the thing with Men's Nonno is it's so eager, like they're so keen, like it's really, it's quite a, so straight away you're in it and it's kind of, they do straight up, so it's men shot on the street,
And they've got some nice, it's quite a mix as well. I think they've got some big full bleed images, and then there's kind of more, I guess, what you kind of standard sort of fashion shots. And, but is this taking, it's not just fashion though, right? I mean, I believe they're also getting into some, you know, bits of culture,
it's
books. It has some
fashion.
Other stuff.
It's mostly fashion. It's a whole bit on London street style. And
I definitely saw a red phone box in there.
Yeah.
It could only be.
But no, it is mostly fashion. It's mostly, in its the product shots as well, which is something that British magazines find quite hard to do, because I think they think they have to try and beautify them in some way or make it an interesting, like some shoes on a rock or something, you know, the classic like still life torture.
So, and how do you like that kind of approach, to be slightly more not sort of objective about it, but just to say, you know, these are the wares that we are interested in. Here they are, not kind of dressing it up literally or metaphorically too much.
The good thing about this is it's actually got brands that aren't. I mean, there's a spread here which is Prada, Bottega, Saint Laurent, and Celine, which is interesting. Celine in a men's magazine, but then also on the next page it's got Com and Porter, the amazing Japanese brand Yoshida Porter, I think the head Porter, Undercover, like interesting brands. So it's not just willfully we have to do advertise. It's got other stuff in it. I mean, an American magazine tried to do it called Cargo about 10 years ago, and it was a really valiant attempt to do a men's shopping magazine in America, and it failed. They couldn't make it work at all.
And was that just the right idea at the wrong time, do you think? Is the marketplace changed now? Or do you think there's a certain difficulty about translating that?
It's to do with eagerness. I think it's to do with that there's something about this magazine and also Japanese shopping culture, which is very cult-like and very obsessive and quite sort of nerdy in a kind of list-making kind of way.
Absolutely.
And it's something I really like about shopping as well. I like that cultiness. And I think maybe in the UK and maybe in America, I think there's a kind of embarrassment about that, or there isn't that,
Well, not for
nerdiness.
Exactly, not for the first time. Perhaps we've got some lessons we should learn from our friends and colleagues in Japan. Mm. Let's continue. I don't know if we've got. I don't know if there's any more free gifts.
I think that's all your free gifts for today.
Only one per magazine. That's a little disappointing.
It's a sad. But also, it's actually interesting that the men in this magazine as well. They're quite effeminate. It's very non-butch. It's very non. And also, men's magazines in Britain are mostly pretending that suit and tie is still important or being business, but whereas this is it feels very sort of friendly.
Absolutely. Well, there's also some kind of manga features, and I did also notice somebody playing baseball in there.
One picture of baseball. But I mean, in this other one, there's a whole page of Charlie Brown. It's amazing. They've got this the spread of Charlie Brown written in English and then written out in Japanese, which I'll be boring everyone on Instagram with later.
Now, just tell me about a little more of the sort of industry overview. I mean, you sort of touched upon this a bit earlier in terms of we were talking about these relationships between advertisers, fashion brands, this kind of thing. Particularly, I guess, if we look back to, you know, what you've been doing the last few weeks on the sort of, you know, the men's show circuit. Collaborations are always quite interesting, aren't they? And in terms of how, you know, magazines and brands work together, how individual brands themselves work together. Do you think sometimes there's a tendency or a temptation for brands to deliver attractive commercial tie-ups, you know, for example, working with, you know, a label, another designer that's just going to win headlines and garner some popular support? Or do you think that people are actually going there to be in a good place creatively?
It's interesting that one of the best shows I've ever seen in my life I saw last week, Raf Simons' cloak has paused his label for one season to do a line with Sterling Ruby, the artist from LA, and it was called Raf Simons' Sterling Ruby. And most fashion art collaborations are kind of naff because it's all about the finish and it's about this kind of making this quite shiny product which then feels quite empty. But this collaboration was really about process and Sterling Ruby made all the cloth and made all the fabric and he will now make all the fabric for the garments themselves, and there will only be five of certain ones of them but only because it takes him so long to actually make the cloth. And it really felt like a truly genuine collaboration and it was about process and work and that was really good to write about. I really enjoyed thinking about it, and I like process, and I like writing about process. You know, and that felt very genuine. Quite often, it's not so genuine, but it was a real pleasure to write about. And also, that's the kind of lovely thing about writing about shows is that there's such a difference in each one, and when Raf does something like that, it's kind of incredible.
Interesting sort of closing thought. I just wonder then, in terms of when we look through the rest of the media landscape, you know, in sort of the fashion realm, if you like, is there enough interest in that? Is there enough interest in the process, in breaking those things down? Or do you think that inevitably, you know, people have to be drawn to sort of end products and to that kind of sheen and that luster that you mentioned? Or are there enough people out there who do like to kind of take it back and peel back the layers a bit?
I think that most people don't realise what you can do with writing about fashion. And it's certainly why I enjoy doing it. I did arts stuff before it because it was the easy thing to do when I left college and when I was doing interning and stuff. And I really hated doing arts because I hated being at the end of something and being a critic and of something that had been made. And I was like, you know, who am I to judge? I always felt very strange about that. Whereas with fashion, it feels much more of a process, and also there's all these other things involved, like sociological things and ecological things, and it's a super complex subject, and also the surface fluff as well. You know, it's so I don't think most people realise what you can do. No, but then that kind of makes it nice for me, because you know.
Absolutely, you're the winner, Charlie Porter. Thanks very much for coming on the Stack this week and delving into your stack of magazines
thank
with
you.
Us on the programme.
Cheers.
And that brings us to the end of edition 74 of The Stack with me, Tom Edwards. A special thanks to my guest, Charlie Porter. Our producer was David Pleasant. And behind the glass here at Midori House was our studio manager, Claire Urban. If you have any questions or comments, drop us a note at info@monocle.com. And remember, we're back at exactly the same time next Saturday. Of course, you can always listen again at monocle.com or via iTunes. But for now, from me and the team, until next time, it's goodbye.